not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká.
And here's Raul. Ho-ho! Zidane! Oh, fantastic!
Bein Sports Connect, Australia's number one football streaming destination. The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Euro Show here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. You're with Adriano Del Monte and we are reviewing two fixtures of Champions League action that took place this morning. Two huge fixtures, Manchester United hosting Sevilla, Roma and Shakhtar Donetsk. Two of those sides have progressed to the quarterfinal stage of the competition. So six clubs out of the eight now are confirmed. Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Chelsea and Besiktas, the four sides. Two of those will join them tomorrow, the remaining six. So we'll bring you the previews of those two fixtures soon. Of course, Barca-Chelsea, Besiktas hosting Bayern Munich. But we will start today with the fixtures from this morning. As always, the lines are open. 99 44 99 99. If your side played this morning, are in action tomorrow, or you'd just like to share your thoughts, get involved in the conversation at any stage. You can also tweet us. We're at FNR underscore radio at any time as well. You can also text us 0428 933 45. And a reminder to our best caller or tweeter throughout this program and every live program here on the network, we are giving away prizes. Thanks to our friends at Etal. We are giving away, we'll start with the egg twist biscuit, the Kulurakia, delicious indeed. Get involved in the conversation, win yourself a Kulurakia or a Colomba as well. Again, thanks to our friends at Etal. So all you have to do, give us a call, send us a text or tweet us and we will send them out to you for being involved in the conversation. This is your voice of football in Australia and let's get into the results from this morning, starting with Manchester United and Sevilla. Here as always to help me analyse this match and everything else in today's program, Matt Bruick and Rick D'Andrea. Guys, before we get to the action from the morning at Old Trafford, what a result. Sevilla, against all odds, progressed to the final eight of the competition for just the second time in their history.
Yeah, it was a little bit unexpected. I mean, Man United would have been the favourites at home, having secured the 0-0 draw from the first leg. No one really anticipated this. Everyone thought Man United would just sort of crank it up to the next gear. The likes of Lingard, Rashford, Martial, you know, all these sort of players, Lukaku, would just take it to the next level and obviously cruise through to the quarterfinals. Unfortunately, they were not. They were outplayed. And what a substitute move by Vincenzo Montella to bring on Ben Yedder.
Yeah, what a great move. I believe Sevilla deserves it over the two legs. I think they were the better team. First half, you can argue Manchester United played quite well, had a couple of chances. Still got saved a couple of times by De Gea, though. He's still in great form. And then, yeah, the substitute of Ben Yedder obviously made a massive difference. Second goal summed up the whole two legs for Manchester United, just bobbled in very slowly until it was across the line. So a heartbreak for Manchester United. But Sevilla, we said, they are so hard to predict. And on a good day, they can even beat Manchester United throughout two legs, which we just saw. Was a little bit surprising. I think we all thought Manchester United's class would get them just over the line. But we never expected it to be easy for United. And now they're out. So good on Sevilla. Well done.
They are out. And as I said, the first time since 1958 that Sevilla have progressed to the final eight of the competition. So the second time in their history. It's a remarkable statistic. Manchester United miss out on their return to the UEFA Champions League. All the stats and figures in the lead-up pointed directly towards United triumph. They were unbeaten in 21 at home coming in, 17 wins from their last 20 coming in. Sevilla had never won in England, had never been to Old Trafford, but records are there to be broken, and they were, as Sevilla won it 2-1.
Ben Yedder! It's a wonderful finish. And the substitute has done his job here for Sevilla. Clinical. It's the away goal for Sevilla. In by Banega. It's come back out. Has it gone in? Yes, it has. It's Ben Yedder again who celebrates the goal. David De Gea was pawing at thin air. In by Rashford. And thumped on by Lukaku. Seconds are ticking away. Manchester United know that they need another two. Sevilla have done it at Old Trafford. Their European adventure continues.
Stunning scenes at Old Trafford. 2-1, as you heard there, Sevilla with the win. Amazing scenes. Ben Yedda really should have had a hat-trick. He had a one-on-one with De Gea with the final kick of the game, basically. De Gea just stood there and saved it. So it could have been 3-1, probably should have been 3-1. But overall, before we get into the statistical side and the analytical side, it is unbelievable to think that Sevilla have done this against all the odds. As I said, I brought you those statistics. Montella, a rookie manager in comparison to his counterpart Jose Mourinho, but Montella wins out, and in very short time, Montella at Sevilla has taken his side to a Copa del Rey final and now a UEFA Champions League quarterfinal. A great start and a great story for the now former AC Milan boss in the Spanish top flight.
All of a sudden, everyone's regarding him as a tactical genius. If you think about it, based on what you've just written, he did have his issues at Fiorentina and at Milan, as we have said time and time again, but he seems to have unraveled them, I guess, sort of worked out where his deficiencies were. And this Seville team has started to bring them out a little bit more to the fore. And they're actually being quite strong and actually getting results. So it's a good thing to see. And well done to Vincenzo. Let's hope he can go a lot further.
Well, they came to play in this fixture. And that's what I think has baffled most Manchester United fans, because Sevilla have been leaking goals. They're not a side who have been known for their defensive prowess this season, and historically for that fact. And Manchester United at home in the Champions League should have considered themselves more so favourites for this than they evidently did. Another defensive approach by Mourinho. Sevilla incredibly attempting 21 shots on the night. The most amount of shots that United have allowed an opposition side at Old Trafford in a competitive fixture since Real Madrid. They had 22 in 2013. So it's been almost 5 years since the side have had that many shots against Manchester United. Sevilla, you got the feeling, particularly early on in this one, both sides were sort of just finding their moment, picking the time to go for it. But evidently, when it came to the crunch, Sevilla had Ben Yedda, who was the difference in the end, scoring the fastest goal by a substitute off the bench in the Champions League this season, just 87 seconds after coming on, and obviously finishing with a double, and he was the difference.
Yeah, and when you look at the statistics, as you mentioned before, sometimes they don't tell you very much, but in this case, I think they do. So 21 shots, not on target, but general attempts from Manchester United, and 42 for Sevilla throughout the two legs. That's actually exactly double the number over two legs. That's quite surprising, isn't it? I mean, like, at Sevilla, we saw that Sevilla were dominant and could have scored a couple of goals, and Manchester United were poor. But I think we all expected Manchester United approaching this with a very offensive approach and scoring early, maybe, to put Sevilla under pressure. And the longer it stayed 0-0, the harder the chances were for Sevilla. And one more stat I came across. So throughout both legs, Manchester United had 4 shots on target. 4. I mean,
in 4 out of those 21.
4 out of those 21 in 180 minutes for a club like Manchester United, clearly not good enough, and it's not really a big wonder they only scored once.
Mourinho has had his critics over the journey, but particularly now at Manchester United, a club who demands success, historically so successful, but not so successful in recent seasons. Obviously, slowly but surely working their way back up the English Premier League standings, back into the UEFA Champions League now. But where are they at? Because for me, over the 180 minutes, they were clearly outplayed by Sevilla. Not just outplayed, they were convincingly outplayed by this Sevilla side. I don't think the result was that surprising. Sevilla matched it with Liverpool in the group stage. They had their moments in the group stage as well. But do you feel the expectation for these English Premier League clubs, particularly one of the rich history of Manchester United, it may be a little too high for where they are currently at?
You just thought with Manchester United, the hype was there. They had the quality of player that was a little bit better than what Seville had produced over the years and what they were currently playing. So that's where the hype was around Manchester United. That's why they were seen as being the team that were going to be favourites to obviously take out the tie, but then obviously progress. As for Mourinho, I mean, we seem to forget he did win the Europa League last season. So he has got a European trophy under his belt, and he did claim it last season. So maybe we need to cut him that little bit of slack. Maybe it is because it is the Portuguese manager, and we do expect that he is so dominant and and he does get the results in the end, that we have to obviously give him all this pressure and put all the, and apply to it. But maybe we just need to cut him that little bit of slack. He may have just gotten things a little bit wrong. And yes, it has been at the pointier end of a Champions League match that he has failed.
The issue with Mourinho, though, is that it has been time and time again this season where he has got it wrong in the matches that count. For me this morning, Manchester United's midfield, no creativity whatsoever. They tried to pressure Sevilla in defence, but Sevilla looked calm, composed, and they just played it out at will. They were the better side over the two halves and over the two legs for that fact. Again, for me, the result wasn't surprising because United really didn't put Sevilla under pressure, didn't take some chances in the first leg. But I remember in the first leg, Nzonzi particularly had a huge chance for Sevilla to break the deadlock there and didn't take it as well. I just feel the expectation is a little high, but the pressure on Mourinho is warranted. He's a big manager who has won everything there is to win in world football. If he wants to bring this proud club back to the top of English and European football, Manchester United fans right around the world deserve better than what they dished up against the Sevilla side tonight. Sevilla are a very strong side, should not be underrated, but I feel that they were underrated a little by Mourinho and United, and maybe the fans as well, because the 2-1 win for me is not surprising at all.
Yeah, I believe generally the English Premier League is a bit overrated. I mean, that's a story for another day, but are the expectations too high on Menu here? I think you believe so. I don't think so, because if you play Sevilla at home after a 0-0 at Sevilla, and if you're bringing a coach through over the last years like a Mourinho, and then you're bringing players for heaps of money, obviously a Pogba, Lukaku, Sanchez, all superstars of the game, all of them played at English clubs before except from Pogba though, and then you expect to beat a Sevilla in the quarterfinal or in the last round of last 16 in the Champions League. That's just the ambition you should have, and especially Manchester United with their rich history and their recent success, and also with their Champions League success in recent years. I mean, of course it's their ambition to beat Sevilla at home, and the fans shouldn't actually be, I mean, taken away from that. I mean, that should be their ambition. They have a world-class goalkeeper. If you compare both squads, Manchester United are clearly better on paper. They have a brilliant coach who's proven it all. Maybe he's made some mistakes this time, but generally I don't think the expectations are too high, because the expectations for Manchester United putting all that money in should actually be to proceed against the Sevilla team. They're a great team, Sevilla, but Manchester United at home after a draw away, I think their ambition should be to go through.
No doubt. And it's crazy to see that Manchester United and PSG, two of the clubs who did spend a lot more money than others in recent seasons, are both out at the round of 16 stage of this competition. Just goes to show that money doesn't always guarantee success. I just wanted to put this quote I came by past you both. Ray Wilkins was quoted via the TalkSport Twitter account. I saw this pop up. Where would Sevilla be in the Premier League if they were a participant in that competition? His response prior to the first leg, this was retweeted, this is why I came across it via the TalkSport Twitter account. His response to where would Sevilla be in the Premier League if they were playing at the present time was probably bottom six.
I think he's missed the point completely. No chance.
So no. Ray Wilkins has come out and then said that United have nothing to fear when they face this Spanish side in the competition. Well, they're out now, so nothing to fear, but they're eliminated. Sevilla march on. But to say that Sevilla are a, or would be a bottom six side in the Premier League, we're saying that they would be matching it with the likes of West Brom, Stoke, Southampton, Huddersfield, and so on and so forth. You get my drift there. But that is, for me, the, like you mentioned, Matt, in terms of the mentality of these English sides at the present time, they, when I talk about potential high expectations, they're not ready to win this competition just yet, let alone get past Sevilla in the round of 16. Manchester City with Guardiola, for me, is a different beast. But these sides, United, Liverpool, Arsenal aren't even there, Chelsea and Tottenham, they're not quite ready yet to win the tournament, let alone get past Sevilla in the round of 16.
Yeah, and how ridiculous and how arrogant are those comments? Like, look at the Champions League finals in the last couple of years. Like, how many English teams have been there? Not many.
Well, no one since 2012 when Chelsea won it.
Exactly. So if they're all so great and Sevilla would be bottom six, like, where are they taking that from? Like, their national team is pretty crap lately, let's be honest. The league is all right, but it's not the very best in the world. Like, they all think they always are, and they can just dominate everyone if they are Man City and spend billions of dollars. We saw, like you before, money can't just buy everything. Paris out now. Now we've got Man U. Okay, Manchester City, they're still in, but you know what? I don't believe they will win it either. Mm. I believe other clubs can more, like a Bayern and a Juve or a Barca, who've played together for a long time. And that's really what also annoys me about the Premier League. Yes, it's good football, but like this arrogance to think you're just above every other league and there's no competition and the Premier League is the greatest of them all, I don't think so. And this was another example.
It just goes to show that a team of champions cannot beat a champion team. It's the old quote, everyone says it, but it's exactly what has happened. Seville, they have literally built a team rather than Manchester United, who have gone and got the champions and have basically been unable to put it all together when it's actually counted.
Well, let's speak about one of those champions, because Paul Pogba has faced a lot of scrutiny this season. And again, his cameo in the second half year failed to perform once again. And it's sad to see, because Pogba's potential is obviously there. Few injury issues, few form issues, falling out with Mourinho, which is very, very evident. Where is Paul Pogba at? Is he the sort of player that is the 100 million euro man that they should be building this club around in the future around? Because for me, from what I'm looking on from the outside, it doesn't really appear that he wants to be at the club, let alone excel and play at the highest level he can.
Does he even seem to be in Mourinho's plans? That's the other question. It doesn't really seem to be at the moment. He hasn't really fit in at all in whatever Mourinho's formations and tactical setups have been over the last 18 months.
Well, we saw at Juventus while he was there, at times was played out of position. And when he was played out of position in his younger days, he struggled. It's still happening now. If he's not played in his exact position, he's a very good player, but he's also limited at times. He can't really adapt to other roles. And if you're a 100 million euro player, you should be playing in your position. So much money invested. Right. It is ridiculous to think that any manager in world football would not play that player in their position. So Pogba, a bit out of position, a bit out of form, and the injuries, of course, don't help as well. That and dealing with a stubborn Mourinho, it's a recipe for disaster. And for me, the only option now is that Pogba will become less content with life in Manchester and ultimately may leave at season's end.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned the stubbornness of Mourinho. That's one of those typical Mourinho moves. It's like everyone around him sees he should be in this position, but he tried Pogba in the other position. And even though it doesn't work, he still thinks he's right. And is just continuing to play in there rather than adapt, because he thinks he is the mastermind. And this, I had an idea behind it, and he's going to stay there no matter how bad we play. Not great. I mean, how much longer is Mourinho going to stay if they actually don't succeed soon? So maybe it's just a matter of who goes first, Mourinho or Pogba, because I don't think any of those or either look very happy at this stage. So especially Pogba, you could see his body language in the end. It was like in the 87th minute, just like a pass forward, straight out. So that's something you never see from Pogba, like a technical mistake kind of. And he looked a bit careless too. So not great for his motivation either. And also like a Sanchez coming in, that all didn't really work out. But like you said, if you bring in someone for 100 million, surely you should play him in his position. And I'm not sure what the idea was behind bringing him in and what Mourinho's idea is right now. But yeah, this doesn't work. And now they're out of the Champions League too. Can't compete for the title anymore. So a very disappointing season.
So we've got Alexis Sanchez, who you mentioned as well there, Matt. Now, Sanchez is another one, because he's obviously made the switch from Arsenal. Again, he doesn't appear to have the enthusiasm to be there. We've seen some falling out from Arsenal. I actually read a report coming out of London the other day suggesting that his teammates by the end hated him at Arsenal due to his mentality and his attitude at the club. It just doesn't appear that these players are buying in. And Rick, we discussed a little earlier off air that this Manchester United squad don't really possess the heart and the desire, on the outside anyway, that they want to be there and win for this club. You've seen the legends of old, Scholes, Giggs, Beckham, and all the legends that Manchester United have had over the journey. They've always had, yes, the technique, yes, the quality, of course, but they've always had that heart and desire to win for the shirt. That is completely lacking, and there are a handful of players who would do that. The rest of them, for me, feels like there are one too many rock stars playing at this club, and again, ultimately, that is detrimental to their long-term success.
Well, it just goes back to that comment I made a few moments ago. It's the champion team versus a team of champions. It's exactly that. It's summed it up perfectly. Manchester United back in the day, the old class of 92, as you can say, they were all about playing for the team, playing for the shirt, bonding and getting together and getting a result together. All of a sudden, the Manchester United of 2017-2018 is all about, or it seems to me from an outsider, all about the rock star. It's all about the money, the bling. If you have a look at them on social media, it's all about, look at me, look at me, look what I'm doing, look what I'm eating, look what I'm being around. It's all about this rock star mentality. Maybe it's just footballers evolving, but that's what it seems to me. And it's not about playing for the shirt. And maybe that's what these footballers, these big time superstars, or who think they are superstars, need to go back to, and need to go back to actually saying to themselves, Remember when I was 5 and 6 and I loved playing football? Let's go back to that rather than the £200,000 wage that they seem to be getting week in, week out.
No, you very well said. And that's going to have to change. And that starts with the manager, though, for me. And that's why the questions continue to raise with regards to Mourinho and his future at the club. I mentioned Paul Scholes earlier. He mentioned at halftime today, he said that this Sevilla side are bad. They don't have a goal in them. United should win this. He said that live on television. And they had a couple of goals in them and should have been 3, as I said. So a disappointing night for United. They bow out, but Sevilla, who knows, can they go one better? Can they get into the semi-finals? The draw, of course, Friday. They're probably the weaker side remaining with Roma, who we'll get to shortly, but an uphill battle now for Sevilla. But they will be thrilled that for the second time in their history, they are now in the quarter-final stage of the UEFA Champions League. So a remarkable result. Sevilla progressed 2-1 on aggregate, of course, after that nil-all draw in the first leg. Congratulations to them. Commiserations to United. We're off to our first break for the day here on the Euro Show. Stick around, though, because the fallout from Roma and Shakhtar on the other side of the break, as well as previews of the two big Champions League fixtures to come tomorrow morning as well. Stay tuned. This is the Euro Show on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia.
He's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká.
Here's Raul. Zidane.
Bein Sports Connect, Australia's number one football streaming destination. The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the Euro Show here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. You're with Adriano Del Monte, Matt Bruick and Rick D'Andrea. We've just cast our eye over the Manchester United-Sevilla clash. It's time now to change over to the Roma-Shakhtar Donetsk match, the second leg at the Stadio Olimpico this morning. But before we do, quick reminder here that at Football Nation Radio, we are very excited to announce that you can now become one of us. That's right, you can be part of the huge voice of football in Australia by becoming an FNR member today. Visit www.footballnationradio.com, click on the Become a Member link, and all the details are there. Get involved, be the voice of football, become an FNR member today. Roma Shakhtar Donetsk. Big match, Stadio Olimpico, second leg. Shakhtar winning the first leg 2-1. They hadn't conceded a goal, Rick, coming into this fixture in 2018. Of course, an extended winter break in Ukraine. But they came in and they did concede. It finished 1-0. Roma go through to the final eight.
Yeah, well done to the Giallorossi. I didn't actually realise this, but the Giallorossi as well hadn't conceded a goal in the Champions League all season. So it's congratulations and a very big congratulations to Di Francesco and co for actually getting through. Well done to them. Let's see how far they can actually go, because they will be a threat. Defensively, they're not the greatest, but they really did stand up tonight. And Edin Džeko up top, he knew exactly what he was doing all night long, had plenty of chances, and it was good to see him actually put one away.
You've stolen my best statistic there, Rick, with the no goals conceded at home in the Champions League thus far. But I'll also have you know, I've got a few other stats. Shakhtar had won 15 of 19 ties coming in this competition when leading in the first leg. However, 66% of teams leading 2-1, in addition to that, 66% of sides leading 2-1 go through. So, again, the odds stacked against the Giallorossi here, but like Sevilla did, they broke a few records and proved a few things wrong, earning a recall to the final eight of the UEFA Champions League for the first time in a decade. It was an amazing night for Roma. They win it 1-0. Edin Džeko, again, the man getting on the score sheet, and he was the man again. He was really the man. He's been brilliant all season. Had those transfer rumors away from the club linking him to Chelsea in January, he stayed. And how important that proved to be for Di Francesco and Roma.
Absolutely. I mean, considering that all we were saying throughout the January period is, when will he move? When will he move? When will he move? Well, ultimately, he didn't. And he wouldn't have been playing in the Champions League because he would have been cap-tied. And so he wouldn't have been able to actually come onto the pitch for the Blues. So it's good to see that all of a sudden he was able to take all these chances. And he had plenty of them overnight. He had, I think, about five or six that I counted as well. And he played the hand in getting Ortega sent off as well for Shakhtar. So he had basically a man of the match performance, and well done again.
So 1-0, it finished in front of 50,000 spectators at the Stadio Olimpico. Again, as I said, Roma through to the quarterfinal stage of the UEFA Champions League for the first time in a decade.
And the through here, flag stays down, a goal! Brilliantly taken! Edin Dzeko! Well, Di Francesco called for the fans tonight.
Shakhtar also finishing the match in 10. Odets sent off 10 minutes from time. It was a nervy finish, though, for Roma. Very nervy, because Shakhtar pressed and pressed and pressed. But really, at the end of the day, not too many opportunities. Not a shot on target for the Ukrainian side. They did pepper the goal very late, but zero shots on target. The telling statistic for obvious reasons. Roma maintained that brilliant home record. 3-0 win over Chelsea in the group stage, a win over Karabakh, a 0-0 with Atletico, now 1-0 with Shakhtar as well. So that's going to be an important statistic for Roma to take into the quarterfinal stage, where I'm fairly confident they'll be the underdogs in whoever they are to draw in that stage of the competition. But again, a special night for Roma. The first time, the last time they were in the quarterfinal stage, they lost to Manchester United 3-0 on aggregate 10 years ago. And incredibly as well, another stat, it's the first time in 11 years the two Italian clubs have been in the final eight of the UEFA Champions League. Of course, Roma joining Juventus in that stage of the competition.
Yeah, very well done. So the Serie A has been very bad in the last couple of years, or maybe the last decade, and they are slowly coming back now, which is great to see. I think the Serie A is one of the biggest leagues in the world. They've got one of the most prestigious teams, if you just think about Juve, Milan, Inter, etc. Also now AS Roma, Napoli are getting there. I was quite impressed with Roma. They played quite well. I was on the same end pretty disappointed with Donetsk. I mean, zero shots on targets, you mentioned it. That's really disappointing. So it clearly looked to me, although they had more possession, which was interesting in the game because it didn't really look like it from the outside, but it kind of appeared that they wanted to maybe draw 0-0 and go through. It's always the danger when you win the first game 2-1 and you go 0-0 into the halftime. And then you talk to your coach and you're probably thinking like, okay, look, we've got only 45 minutes left. We did quite well in the first half. Roma didn't create too much. Maybe if we can just continue doing that, it's going to be enough and we're going to score. They're not going to score. We're going out with a 0-0 and we're actually staying in the competition. Didn't happen. So Dzeko goal came out of nowhere a little bit, but then they weren't able to bounce back. So very good for Roma.
A great finish by Edin Dzeko. I felt for Piatov, the goalkeeper of Shakhtar, because he was very good, very impressive over the two legs, maybe with exception to the first half of the first leg. But he was very good, very solid. And Roma really before that didn't have too many chances of their own to really break the deadlock in this one. But he hesitated very slightly. Dzeko made the most of a brilliant ball through by Kevin Strootman, the Dutch midfielder, playing him through expertly there. And Dzeko scored again. So he started very, very hot in the season. Not so hot in 2018, but great for him to score another pivotal goal in the UEFA Champions League for AS Roma. It was funny after the match, Strootman, the player who provided that assist, actually uploaded the first picture, as you do these days, to social media, and he uploaded a picture of the Roma squad, and front and center of the image was Bruno Perez in a suit, a player who didn't even play, or he obviously just got changed, but he was an unused substitute in this fixture, Perez, and in the picture, he was holding up his right foot because that right foot was the right foot that prevented Roma losing the first leg 3-1, where Shakhtar should have scored, but for Bruno Perez's last-ditch challenge on the goal line. So while Dzeko scores the winner, Bruno Perez maybe the player who made the difference.
He probably would have been the player of the tie had we once we analysed the whole picture. I'm just going to say this. Raja Nagalan, Daniele De Rossi, Kevin Strootman. What a difference 2 weeks can make to that Roma midfield. That Roma midfield was completely outplayed in the first leg. complete. And then you throw in Florenzi, who probably had his worst game ever, I think, at Roma in the first leg, where he basically was just tailed up by Bernard and by Tyson all day long. He's come out. He was probably the closest thing that Shakhtar had to actually scoring a goal from that header that Alisson needed to almost clear away. He was the closest thing that Shakhtar had to scoring a goal. That says a lot. That's how bad Shakhtar were in Rome. That says it all.
Hard to get a read on Roma, particularly in the last few months, because recall before that Shakhtar first leg, they had had three straight wins against minnows of Italian football. But prior to that, no win in seven. Now, Roma, since the Shakhtar loss in the first leg, 0-2 defeated home to AC Milan. But then was the result, which for me has changed the season. Napoli at home, away, San Paolo Stadium, a 4-2 win, possibly ending Napoli's quest for a Scudetto. But that result seems to have changed something in the club. And they've gone from strength to strength. Since 3-0 at the weekend against Torino, a 1-0, another clean sheet at home here against Shakhtar, maybe sky's the limit for Roma this season.
Well, we were saying earlier in the season, I think around the January, February period, we were saying that Di Francesco was creating all these chances and his style of football was creating all these shots on target and shots on goal, but Roma just weren't converting them. Maybe now the tide has turned a little bit. Now that those chances, they're still being created, but now they're actually being finished off. And that just gives you a whole different level and a whole different perspective. So, you know, maybe it just took a little bit of time to click, and this is now the end result of it. They have clicked.
Well, that's right. 8 goals now in their last 3 games. Really struggled in that winless stretch to score. So it wasn't just the issue that they couldn't win. They actually weren't scoring goals. Failed to score multiple goals, actually, in an 11-game span. So it was a dry spell there for Dzeko and his fellow attackers for Roma. But slowly but surely, Under again coming on, the Turkish youngster. He was in action in this fixture. Was substituted early in the second half. Not the greatest performance, but an extra attacking weapon has made the difference. Slowly but surely, they're getting stronger. And you've seen that with their form in the league now, because 5 wins from their last 6 in the Serie A. And they are comfortably third and looking good to return to the UEFA Champions League next season. But of course, their intentions and full focus now on the UEFA Champions League. They are the final 8 for the first time in a decade, as I said, and they will be eagerly anticipating the draw Friday evening. That, of course, live on Bein Sports. Bein Sports Connect as well. So Roma, one of 6 clubs this morning, joined by, of course, Sevilla, along with the other 4 from last week who were there. 2 more to be decided out of 4. 2 fixtures to come tomorrow, of course. Barcelona and Chelsea, Bayern Munich travel to Besiktas with a fairly handy 5-goal lead. Let's get to a break, guys. On the other side, we'll preview those fixtures, as well as Juventus and PSG, who are in action in the league tomorrow morning as well. Still some news and rumours to come. Stay tuned. This is the Euro Show on FNR Football Nation Radio.
He's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká.
Here's Raul. Ho-ho! Zidane!
Bein Sports Connect, Australia's number one football streaming destination. The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the Euro Show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. There are 4 fixtures tomorrow morning that we're going to preview. Now, we'll start with the remaining Champions League fixtures, though. And the first one, which we are all very, very excited about, Barcelona and Chelsea. Great history in this competition, these two proud clubs. But they meet at the Nou Camp in the second leg, 1-1. It finished at Stamford Bridge. Messi scoring for the first time in his career against Chelsea in his 9th attempt. Barca coming in, they'll be confident, one of the favourites for the competition, and they are incredibly eyeing off an 11th straight quarterfinal appearance. I feel they're in the box seat to do so, but if Antonio Conte can get his side up, maybe get an early goal, the tie could change. But Barcelona, for me, favourites to go through. They've got a great record at home against English clubs. 19 wins, 11 draws out of 32 fixtures. So that's just 2 defeats. You'd imagine Chelsea they'll be trying to win the match. You'd think they'll at least try to score early. But Conte, he's aiming to become the 4th Italian remaining in the final eight in terms of managers still there. Three, he's will try to become the fourth, so could do that, but they're up against it, against a red-hot Barcelona side who will welcome back Lionel Messi after missing the league clash against Malaga at the weekend.
They'll probably also welcome back Ousmane Dembele. So he'll add an extra element of attacking prowess to that lineup. Whether he gets picked in the final 11, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I can't wait to see Suarez, Messi again take on the likes in defence that we saw in the first leg. And they will be hungry. I mean, that final third in the first leg, Barcelona could not do anything. They could not get anything past Courtois. They could not get past anything between that or past that back three that Conte put up. This is going to be really fascinating to see if the same errors occur again, which is why I'm starting to think that someone like a Jordi Alba or Sergio Roberto, just to provide that extra width to get past those centre-backs, might be even more crucial than someone like a Lionel Messi or even a Luis Suarez.
I can't see Chelsea winning this game at all. I mean, Barcelona are so strong. They got the away goal, which is exactly what they wanted. And they're not going to do it, but even if they wanted to, they can just draw 0-0 and go through. They're never going to do it, Barcelona at Nou Camp. We know that. I think from the very start, they will dominate Chelsea. It happened in the first leg already. I think Chelsea were pretty lucky that they got a 1-1 out of it, although I know William hit the crossbar and the post. But overall, I think it was complete dominance by Barcelona. Maybe you can argue the goal by Barcelona was a little bit lucky. But playing-wise, if you look at those two teams, I think it's kind of a different world, which is interesting because Chelsea's ambition should be to be one of the best in Europe, if not the world. But at this moment, I don't think they are. And I think Barcelona are right up there. I mean, Adriano, we think they're one of the favourites to win the Champions League. And I believe they will win quite convincingly, which is funny to say because Barcelona and Chelsea, they're always great battles. But at this stage right now, I just believe Barcelona are a class above Chelsea and at Nou Camp. I think they will win it.
Barcelona, of course, a 2-0 win away to Malaga at the weekend. Chelsea, a 2-1 win against Crystal Palace a few days ago. So both sides coming off wins. I do take some hope for the Chelsea fans, though, from that first leg because the goal came due to a mistake. Besides that, they were flawless. They were a very impressive Chelsea, and I thought they'd be beaten at home against Barcelona. They held their own. They got their goal. Willian was brilliant in that first leg. You'd imagine he'll have to perform even better than that if they're to have any chance in this. He did score at the weekend, though, so he, for me, holds the key to any Chelsea hope. I'm not going to rule them out, but obviously Barcelona, heavy, heavy favourites to go through. And they're, of course, riding that sensational unbeaten run in the league. 35 matches unbeaten in La Liga. They're attempting to chase down the all-time record of 38 by Real Sociedad side. Many years ago. They've had just one defeat this season, and that was in the Copa del Rey. So they've beaten everyone, and they are one of the best sides in world football. Chelsea, you wish them luck. This doesn't get any tougher than that. Messi fresh as well. That does not help. But Chelsea certainly have had a decent campaign, but with no guarantee they'll be back next season and with not much else to play for this season. This is it. This really is it for Conte and Chelsea. And it could be the last time that we see Conte with Chelsea in the UEFA Champions League.
Maybe it's similar to like a Zinedine Zidane predicament. I mean, he's fourth in the league at the moment, I think, Chelsea. So they're in and around that final Champions League spot. They're out of the cups. They've really got nothing else to play for. This is it. You know, backs to the wall type situation. This is when the best comes out. They've got probably the toughest opponent of all the teams in the Champions League. They're going to have to really put on a real good show in order to get through.
Quick score prediction before we move to the other clash.
2-1, Barcelona.
3-0.
3-0. I'm going to take Barcelona 2, Chelsea 0, despite the fact that Chelsea are incredibly unbeaten in their last eight against Barcelona. That is a crazy stat, but 2-0 for me. The other fixture tomorrow morning, Bayern Munich take a 5-goal lead to Besiktas. We discussed, Matt, in the lead-up to the first leg that it was a shame for Besiktas, despite topping the group, that they had to play away from home first because that was going to be mission impossible. It proved exactly that. Now it's really impossible. They'll need to win by 5 goals without conceding just to take this one to extra time. Bayern on the verge of another quarterfinal appearance.
Yeah, it's not going to happen for Besiktas, unfortunately. I'm still hoping the fans will rock up because they are great home supporters. And even if they not really a big chance to progress any further. It's still always a great game in the Champions League to play Bayern Munich, so maybe if they can get a win out of this game, they would be quite happy. A little bit like Basel did at Manchester City. They weren't really to progress, but the Basel fans were still celebrating that win as if they were through, so it could be a great night anyways. Yeah, Bayern Munich will rest a couple of players. News out of Germany say that Lewandowski will definitely not play. Maybe he's not even going to be taken there, and Sandro Wagner, who they transferred in winter period from Hoffenheim, will take his spot. Apparently he trained really well, so a good chance for Bayern Munich to rest a couple of players but still actually expose some of the younger players to one of those hostile environments in a competition that is the Champions League, which is one of the best in the world. So a great opportunity for Bayern Munich, and just for all the being sports watchers, that game at 4 o'clock Melbourne time already, because it's played in Turkey, so actually perfect for tomorrow morning. Can start it off with Besiktas Bayern, and then afterwards you can watch Barca against Chelsea.
Of course, that clash at 6:45 a.m. Every game of the Champions League live on Bein Sports Connect, or also available later via catch up. Coming into this one, Bayern have won 5 straight UEFA Champions League games, 14 of their last 15 against Besiktas, who are making their debut in this round of the competition. And unsurprisingly, Rick, no team has ever overturned a 5-goal deficit. No, so
not surprising at all.
I think Bayern will cruise through. I'm going to tip them to win narrowly. I think 1-0 they'll win this, but they will win and they will progress. A quick score before we move to the domestic competitions.
I'm just going to go 2-0 Bayern and no chance of a remontada.
I'm just going to tip 1-1. Besiktas deserve a draw out of this.
Well, they have had a remarkable campaign. They topped that very difficult group, so hopefully they can end on a high and we see them back in the UEFA Champions League in the near future. Two fixtures to quickly touch on in the domestic competitions. The French Ligue 1 first, Paris Saint-Germain against Angers. Now, this match, well, not too much riding on it. PSG, according to what I'm reading, are going to play a fairly weakened side, as these fixtures mean very little now. Angers 14th, PSG, of course, well and truly clear, 14 points clear of Monaco. Little to play for as we come towards the end of another Ligue 1 campaign.
You just have to wonder how weak, in inverted commas, this PSG team will be. Even if they field their second string team, they'd probably beat most teams in Ligue 1. So you just have to wonder, are they going to play like a youth team even? Go, you know, the under-19s and blood them and give them a go and, you know, give them 90 minutes. You just have to wonder. I mean, PSG should be too strong. You know, 3-0 maybe, 4-0?
They'll do it fairly easy, they will. They're without a number of key players. Of course, Neymar out for the season. Edinson Cavani unlikely to return. So you will see a few new faces there. I don't know if they'll field the under-19 side, but I think they will get the win. And they will absolutely cruise to this title. They still have hopes of breaking the 100 points mark. 9 fixtures remain. They need 23 points. Do some quick maths.
They'll get it.
They can do it. They certainly can do it. 7 wins, 2 draws in that time. They will get there. They'll get there just. I thought they'd do it a bit easier, but they will get there. They've only dropped points in 4 fixtures. So they will get there. 25 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats, and 91 goals scored.
But you know what's funny? I'm actually really sure they're going to go to the 100 points, and they might even get like 110. Mm. And even if they do, the season's still a failure. That's the interesting part. They can win the league. They can win the cup, which they're in the semifinals or final. I'm not quite sure. But because of that Champions League knockout against Real Madrid, the season is pretty much done. And that is unbelievable.
They will very likely win 3 trophies, miss the one that counts, and have a failure of a season, and likely have a coach who moves on and a number of key players who move on.
Ever seen a coach being sacked after winning 3 trophies? It's crazy.
And 100 points and 120 goals. This will certainly be a first. But PSG Angers tomorrow morning. Juventus Atalanta, this is huge. This is very big in the Serie A. Of course, this match was postponed due to snow a few weeks back. They make up the match now, so a busy schedule for Juve continues. Rick, we touched on this before this period started. The 1st of March, Juve Atalanta in the Coppa Italia. This was the start of 6 fixtures in 18 days for Juventus. This is the 5th. And no surprise, they've won the other 4, which included that win away to Tottenham at Wembley to progress to the final 8. So they've done everything required of them. Napoli have slipped up in the meantime as well in the Serie A. Win this, 4 points clear, one hand on a seventh straight Scudetto.
It probably will be that. 4 points clear would be a nice little thing for Juventus. The only downside I consider that is that Juventus actually have the tougher run home compared to Napoli. Other than obviously having to meet one another, I think around the 22nd of April, Juve still have to play Roma, they still have to play Inter, and they still have to play Milan. So it's not going to be an easy fixture for them coming home. This will help. The boost will help. 4 points clear will be very nice. Juve, they may rest one or two players from who they played last week. It'll just be an issue just regarding, you know, player management. This is what it's all going to come down to. Juve should win, maybe a 1-0, just to sort of cruise past Atalanta. Atalanta have been good, but I think they've started to slow down after their Europa League exit.
Still yet to concede a goal in the league in 2018. It's a phenomenal statistic. They keep doing it year in, year out. They have not conceded in the league since, well, New Year's Eve local time. So 30th of December in Europe, a 3-1 win away to Verona. They will win. They will keep Atalanta to a clean sheet again. No Caldara for Atalanta. Big blow, their key defender out. He will, of course, move to Juventus next season. So disappointing that he can't play for Atalanta one last time against his club for next season, but Juve going for a sixth straight win and a seventh straight title. As I said, they win this. Despite the tough run home, Rick, they still do play Napoli at home, which will be the match that they will be focusing on, because ultimately win that match, that will be the Scudetto wrapped up. So a big match in Italy tonight. And some news coming out of the Juventus camp regarding Chiellini and Barzagli, of course, two of their veteran defenders. According to Tutto Sport in Italy, reporting that both are close to new deals. So Chiellini, a two-year deal. Barzagli, a new one-year deal. Both players could be extending their careers. Chiellini, not surprising at all, but Barzagli certainly in the twilight of his career now, looking to extend by another season. And while with Juventus, before we move away, Blaise Matuidi, of course, the star French midfielder who joined from PSG last summer. Ray Sports are reporting that Manchester United are preparing a £18 million bid the Frenchman. £18
million. Well, considering that Juve paid £15 million for him only last August, I don't think £18 million is going to quite cut it.
Rick, I'm just delivering the reports. That's what I've read.
Deliver the reports, but unfortunately, I don't think this is going to cut it.
£18 million. There you go. A few other transfer rumours elsewhere. Bayern Munich, Robben Ribery, two stars whose future are unclear. Contract talks said to be underway. Any indication, Matt, as to where we're at here?
Yeah, they're still unclear. Funny thing is, there was a picture yesterday, in the newspaper of Ribery shaking the club's boss's hand. It was just for a dinner or something. You know what? People were already saying, oh, look, this is where they sealed the new contract and all that kind of stuff. You know how the rumors are. Robben and Ribery, they both want to stay. They both stated that publicly. Mm-hmm. And now it's up to Bayern Munich. I believe it depends on how bad the injury for Coman is. But the problem with the Robben and the Ribery, it's not really a problem, but their mentality is they want to play every single game. And if you put a Coman all of a sudden in front of a Robben or of a Ribery and put one of them on the bench, they're really unhappy. And they actually say that publicly. And that is not good for the team's spirit. So either we have to see now, are they actually good enough to play a whole nother year? They're getting injured over and over again. You kind of consider that already with those two. But they are still a class above some of the other world-class players. So are they good for another year? And mostly playing 90 minutes, because otherwise they're getting annoyed? Or are we actually telling them, hey, it was great with you guys, but we're like counting on the likes of a Coman now or of other players? Very, very interesting. I would extend with Robben still. Ribery was injured for so long, but then showed his class again. It was only against Hamburg, I know. But they're still so good when they play, so I would maybe give them another year. And just quickly, you guys, I go against you. I tip Juve Atalanta 1-1.
1-1. There you go.
Interesting. Right.
Well, I've loved watching Robben and Ribery over their careers. They've been wonderful to watch, but maybe the end is near. And just quickly before we wrap up, Tottenham, this is a huge blow, Tottenham in England. It's been confirmed that Harry Kane has been ruled out for 6 weeks at least, with the England striker now racing to be fit for the World Cup. Damaged ankle ligaments for the third time in 18 months at the weekend. So obviously we wish him well in his recovery. So important to Tottenham and to England at the World Cup, but it appears that he will be up against it to make it in time.
And now they're struggling actually to get a Champions League spot, I believe. After this great season, Harry Kane, one of their most important players, if not their most important player, obviously. Then third spot, only 1 point ahead of Liverpool, but then Chelsea, only 5 points behind either. So if Chelsea can get on a roll and Liverpool and Tottenham will drop a little bit without Kane, could be only the Europa League for them, and that would be a shame after that great season.
And of course, if Chelsea are to be eliminated against Barcelona, that will work against Tottenham as well. Mm. That is all for today, though, guys. Full review of the Besiktas Bayern and Barca-Chelsea clashes in tomorrow's program, as well as a full look ahead to the weekend action right across Europe as well. Matt and Rick, thank you as always. But for now, from me, Adriano Del Monte, this has been the Euro Show on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football throughout Australia. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.